Hello, hello. Nice to see you guys. Sue's here and Janet's here and Nachiketa, if I'm saying that correct. And I'm here with Red Fox. We are, in fact, I'll just let you know, we are just meeting right now and just exchanged a few comments in chats last night and made this plan a few days ago. So here we are. It happens to be the solstice. So this was something that I thought it's people have been actually talking a lot about the solstice. And I just thought it was a good chance to mark the maybe the true meaning. If this is something, I'd love for everybody to chime in today about what they think this day of the year is about. If it's even today, I thought it was really tomorrow, but some people have it today or tomorrow. So anyway, welcome Red Fox. Great to have you here with me.
Beth, thank you so much. It is such a pleasure to finally speak with you. Most of, like everyone I mentioned with the great Baldini on my first appearance, I know you all very well. I've been listening and taking copious notes, and I think everyone has their own time to contribute and to speak and to share, and my time is of the present, and I like to keep it of the present. I admire, as I said before in our emails, your trust, and that exhibits a very severe lack of fear, which is very rare in society nowadays.
Thank you. Well, it was interesting because not having even had a conversation with you yet, and I'm always down to the wire. I know I am. I knew before now we wouldn't have a chance, but I just have a lot of trust and faith. First of all, in not blind faith and not even in you. I don't have any basis for trusting you, but one of the great lines that I have in my head from, probably remember his name, Jacob Lieberman, Dr. Jacob Lieberman, was, you know, don't trust anyone, trust your guidance.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm referring to.
Nice.
It's not in oneself. It is, attributed to at least one or more of the archetypes that are in your book, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah, the energy coming through that, exactly. So Israel Adams is here, and Kevlar, and Kelly F.E., Carol, Snake Jones. Great to have you here, Josh Corey. Awesome, got all the good ones. So yeah, having also been connected through this community, that gives me a lot of confidence. It's not to say that, you know, every single person who walks around here, but honestly, I just keep meeting really genuine people that can actually be themselves. That is such a rare quality, don't you think?
It is incredibly rare, and something that I'll touch on later and kind of drive home in the more speaking that I do is, I think, the overall realm of deception that we're in, that you've also described. And I'd like to kind of more specifically get into that, into, you know, the fear-love spectrum, where ignorance falls under the fear part of that spectrum very clearly. And you wouldn't be here, everyone listening now, or in the future, if you had an overall subscription to ignorance. You would not be here at all. Mm-hmm. So you're working your way in a positive direction, in my view, on that spectrum.
I like that. Say more about that.
Right. So I drew a pretty good conclusion, I think, personally, when I was reading your book, to correlate that the fear and love spectrum.
Yeah, you read my book.
Yeah, absolutely. and not to shed any light of any color on your book at all, but it was a very, very digestible read. I read it in 2 hours, just right after lunch. But wow. I'm a very fast reader, and I bring that up because it is a skill that can be learned, and I can go into that possibly later. But everyone can speed read, and it's just a more efficient way of acquiring knowledge, as is audio. When I listen to these things on YouTube or whatever the medium is, I do it at the fastest speed possible with intense focus. And in my view, that's a higher efficiency. And when things are speeding up like this in our current timeline, you need to stay on top of it. So I don't claim to be a know-it-all. This is my humble approach to saying, hey, everybody, let's go with it. let's go with more. Let's wake up and then eat the right quality of oatmeal, so to speak.
That's so good.
And your last guest, Jerry, and his last name, I don't want to mispronounce, and it's leaving my mind right now. But Marzinski, what an amazing guest. There are a lot of points that he touched on, such as the spirit, subscription, and the voices in reference to demons. They were all covered in your last interview. And me, myself, having absolutely no formal psychological or psychiatric background, I resonated with all of that, and I feel that I can kind of describe that in my own views and my experience. But I want to draw correlations first of all to myself and you, because when I was reading your book and hearing your talks, it wasn't just resonance between, I feel like, the spirits that we subscribe to. It was buzzing. It was an intense buzzing. I was like, you know, this chick gets it, right? And I was like, I think I can add value to that. So that's why I got in touch. But I want to, and this is long overdue. We've been on for a few minutes now. But I like to open any speaking that I do with gratitude, because it's extremely rare in our society of vast ignorance. And the gratitude for you begins with this. I want to thank you, Beth, for openly denouncing pedophilia and supporting traditional gender roles and rebelliously addressing corruption, for accurately describing fear disguised as safety through the media. Thank you for drawing the correlation between cancer and stress, for taking half of the day to take care of yourself and spending the other half caring for others. Gratitude to you for teaching lessons learned from failure and calling out acne cream, smoking good quality cannabis, expressing love through the sorrel herb, and by more semantically defining the responsibility of pleasure and saying ever so delicately, there is no priest that can most qualitatively bridge our connection to God than one's own self. Thank you.
Thank you. Brought a tear to my eye.
Aww. Well, you're doing amazing work. And if anyone would just read her darn book and gain as much as you can from it, because we are on a journey. That's the title of the book. We're on a journey, truthfully. I won't reveal too much about myself, but I will draw some similarities that I noticed about the both of us from what you've mentioned in your book. You mentioned at age 29, you had a catalyst of sorts, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we had to run in with cancer. I also did. I had a very catalytic injury. Some choices were made. I was at a crossroads. Crow 777 refers to the crossroads a lot. I've also always gone by my middle name, as you have. And that's been a challenge for me. It was so much frustration to my parents. Why did you name me backwards? Never, ever, ever in my life have I gone by my first name. It's always been my middle name. I experienced the same motivation, I believe, to speak out through discovery of things such as child trafficking. That was kind of a wake up, I think, for you. An example. You're like, I can't take it. I've got to, you know, add value to uncovering this deception here. And I, of course, every day have experience acknowledging the archetype of the nurturer shadow. I think that you do too. I did take your quiz. I took your quiz.
Oh, great. And what was your archetype?
I think I might have had the same issue with Jerry, and it's probably attributed to some technical glitch in the site or something, but I'm sure it's an easy fix, whatever it is, or it could have been on my end too. I don't know, but it did come up first with Awakened King. And the archetypes that I resonated introspectively from your book readings were the Alchemist King and the Hedonist and the Child, mostly in that order. were the ones that I resonated with. And then also the shadows of that, those archetypes, I am as aware of as I can possibly be. And that is the journey that I'm going on. And this is why I chose to speak now. I feel as though I am ready to put the alchemist archetype to practice, so to speak.
Wow. Amazing. It's beautiful. Etiquette said it's like you're interviewing me, but that's totally fine. this guy knows what he's talking about.
Hey, you know what? I think we should all continue as though we started. And how did we start? I think organically. Let's go back to the start of your book. What was the archetype that you began your book with, Beth?
The child.
And that's exactly how we start our journey, isn't it?
Exactly.
And children do absolutely nothing. I can speak from experience. And they're formative at the beginning of their formative years, then ask questions. So don't stop. Just don't stop asking questions. And I think Socratically, by approaching things through a question, you can be more higher-minded and open-minded. Right. And I'm going to touch on this with the great Baldini, Unintended Consequences. We have our next date for July 4th, and there's going to be some things that I let loose there. But it's about that approach. And you started your journey with the child archetype, and that's how we should start too. But the problem is we forgot as a society, as a whole, as a race of men and women, created by the Most High, the Creator, God. We've forgotten just the beginning. We've forgotten the beginning. We're not asking questions. We're not inquisitive. We don't have the gratitude. We operate under an ignorance that is so horrific. It's actually what I describe as a disgust for information. It's turning away from the truth.
Yeah, we've forgotten the beginning, and so we are stuck in the beginning. That's what's going on. And even before the beginning, this was something that, if you don't mind if I interrupt,
please go
ahead. The book, before writing it, I didn't know this was going to be a core central theme running through it. It's amazing. Like, without writing the book, I wouldn't have totally put all this stuff together. But even before the child is the underwritten thread of DNA through the whole entire book. If you might notice, there's a strand of DNA on the back, and it's the masculine and the feminine coming together to create something that neither of them on their own could have ever in a billion years created, birthing this child.
Exactly. And I think that's so important. My view is that, there's something gained in everything, right? If you're truly open-minded, and you notice that the realm that we're in is generally one of deception, it's therefore impossible, in my view, to be at the absolute extreme of one end of the spectrum, of the love-fear spectrum. For example, I don't believe in absolute fear here in our physical realm. I mean, holy, you know, it seems like it's there, right? Because of the things that we're aware of are just so horrific. But I don't believe that it's pure fear or pure hate or pure anger. I think it's way down there on that spectrum. I also don't believe that there's subscribe to the opposite of the absolute love, okay? Because this is God's creation, and He, the Most High, is the only one capable of actually obtaining that, of knowing that, and of containing that within Himself. I think you call it in His ultimate order of infinity. Did I quote you correctly there?
Possibly.
I think that's in your book. Somebody out there, if they don't have the book, just do a control F on there and put it in the chat. I don't want to misquote you, but that's the note I took. Yeah, so He is the ultimate order of infinity. And if we are of His creation, do we have all the elements of Him within us? Yes. The journey, the challenges, Can we make that ultimate attainment of ultimate pure love within this physical realm? My view is no, and that's the challenge. I think that comes after our journey in a physical state. And I hope this resonates with some New Age type people, because in my view, New Age is actually very, very old age. And there's elements of it that have come back and maybe need a little bit of clarification or dusting off. I don't know for sure. This is my journey with you. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, Beth?
Do you mind asking it as a question?
Right. So simply put, are we capable of absolute love as a man and woman in this physical realm?
And by absolute love, I've never used that term before. Would you call that unconditional love, or is that something different?
Yeah, I think it can be referred to as unconditioned. But I think the basis behind my view is that we need to have the humility that we are of God's creation and we are not God himself. Mm-hmm, now, right. To clarify further, can we create in some form? Yes. But to dive into that a little further, I like to think of it as though God provides the divine spark and we provide the building materials as man and woman when creating a new life.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that comes to mind with this is that it's just such a night. You've often seen me do this, the sine wave, the up and the down, we're forever, one of the natural laws is polarization, and the up and the down, and I can't be reminded enough that it's not about just being all up or all love or all anything, because otherwise, I often also have the memory that God is through each creation experiencing itself, his self, however you want to language that.
Yeah.
And God obviously didn't come for homogeneity. I was actually just listening to Benjamin Balderson and Benjamin Owen and James True, and they were just making the example about milk. Like when you homogenize it, you deculture it.
Yeah.
You kill it. You take the most important life essence of that milk, and it's finished.
Yep.
So I don't know if that
exactly and I attribute question. Yeah, mm-hmm. I attribute that to the absence of diversity, right? Because the minute that we touch or alter our God-given diversity, really we are altering his creation, and I just don't think that that's our place at all. I don't, and scripturally, I like to have these conversations specifically with, the Most High regards to creation, the Most High, et cetera, with those of a purely scriptural background, because as I've said before, I came to the scripture completely backwards, but I did have the benefit of not being indoctrinated into religion at all. Mm-hmm. So I have more or less, I think maybe a better start, I'd like to think, but not judging. And yeah, you started off talking about the wave, right? The oscillation, the frequency, the up and down, the peaks and valleys, that subtle energy. I listened to the most recent Secrets of Saturn, and Jason of Crow 777 refers roughly that he thinks everything is frequency-based. Everything is waveform. And, I look into the first few passages of Genesis and that the Creator spoke us into existence. He said, let there be light. He spoke these things that we know to be of nature, of him, acts of God through sound.
Mm-hmm. And then gave all of the creatures a voice, I remember the first time I heard flowers sing.
Oh my gosh. Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Like it's exactly what they're doing. They're like, right?
Have you ever looked into stuff where they are actually connecting plants into like analog synthesizers and things like that musically?
Perhaps a little bit. Yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. Exactly. There's a lot in there of the plant energy. And it's so simple when you zoom all the way out. If we are bioelectromagnetic beings and animals are too, and plants are too, and the sun is, right? Mm-hmm. And the moon is.
Right.
Come on, people. Kiss rule. Keep it simple, stupid. So, but it's so simple. It's a simple challenge. It's a simple challenge. It's not easy, but it's very simple. So it's a journey. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a dream as a child that, it actually was a kind of nightmare, and I was being chased, and there was some kind of harm coming to people. And honestly, I think it was a foreshadowing now seeing the way things are going. And at the end of the dream, the cure was not waking up. It was, which often is from a nightmare, but somebody just out of the blue slapped this thing on my arm. And at first I thought I was being attacked, but I realized that it was a frequency emitter and that all healing was going to come through frequency.
Mm. Very interesting.
I had zero basis for any of that at that point. It was all to come later in my life where I started having, I was more of like a total wayward teenager, not thinking deep at all.
Yeah, I got that impression. And I think you went into that in the Revel section of your book. Mm-hmm. Props to you. I laughed out loud when I was reading it. The Revel is so tenacious. I think you use some edgy language in there quite appropriately to describe that archetype. That was just so cool. So tell me, if you could, more about they slapped something on your arm. Was this physically a device?
Yeah, a device. Yeah, just a frequency. It was just like a, you know, an armband.
Okay. Like some sort of, you know, Bluetooth or Wi-Fi type device.
Right. Exactly. What I could have never even imagined at that point.
Right. Oh my gosh. That's kind of spooky. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Totally.
Well, that's a challenge for me, is the lack of fear. I will share a story actually that just happened this morning. I got up early and I try to, eat the highest quality of actual food and actual beverage that I can attain. And that itself is a struggle and a journey. But once in a while, I do like to partake in what we call a donut or some sort of a sweet bread, you know, a little bit of that. And there's a quality spectrum of that too, obviously, right? But like, for example, the shop that's just right down the road from me, they have the cooler, you know, donuts. And these are not your typical, you know, average grocery store type. They are of the quality of, like, I would say the best kind of croissant that you could have, just flaky, light. I know the owners and the bakers themselves, and they do they do produce all of their food with the best intention. I think when people say they're cooking things with love, then it's really real. I mean, it's so simple. Someone walks into the room and you're like, oh man, I can feel the vibes coming off of that guy. Man, he's in a bad mood. It's so simple. Right there, you are noticing and acknowledging that everything is frequency based. And that is the communication of the unseen realm, in my view. So, of course,
my favorite bakery, I'll just quickly interrupt here, is they actually told me many years ago that their bread was special because of love. They said the yeast is alive. They have a relationship. They're all of their bakers. They only had a handful at that time. Now it's a bigger operation. Interestingly, the quality as they grew, unfortunately, I think, you know, the quality of the bread has systematically done this. I've seen that. And it's a love. I swear it's a love thing. It just can't be done at scale.
That, and then of course, in the physical realm, it's just the quality of the grain that we have. I mean, talk about the heirloom varieties, you know, of seeds and wheat that we used to have 100 years ago, 200-300 years ago. I think Crow did an entire show just on the quality of the seeds that we have nowadays, and it's absolutely provable. Yeah, so I agree. Cooking things, you know, with love, with that intention. Absolutely. So I'll finish my puff pastry story as I was going back home with my sweetbread, my donut. I had eaten, I don't know, enough for me, I guess, in the way. I ran a couple more errands. And on the way back home, I saw a what appeared to be a homeless man, and I think I confirmed that. And I thought to myself, I'm feeling fear. There is an element of fear. I could put myself in danger. And so I was acknowledging that shadow archetype. Well, I said, okay, I'm not going to have any fear at all. If I have an overall subscription to the opposite of that spectrum, it will be one of more or less love. And gratitude is a gateway to that. There are many levels. There are many qualities of love, right? Gratitude being one. And I think that's pretty easy for people to start with. So I made a U-turn. I went back to the guy, said, hey, I got an extra donut. And of course, he lit up. It was, you know, a miracle like that. I got home and I was, I pulled the car in the garage and I came inside and I guess I couldn't find my phone. I was like, oh man, where was my phone? And I went back to the car thinking it fell out of my pocket. And I was looking for my phone and here came that fear again. There was a split second of my subscription to the spirit of fear saying, you know, maybe that homeless guy took my phone out of my car while I wasn't looking. It could be possible. There could have been a chance. Yeah, I allowed that to enter my mind. But yet again, I acknowledged it very, very quickly. Said to myself, no, that's silly. I remember what happened. He didn't put his hands in my car when the window was down. He was of good nature. He was thankful. And sure enough, I moved the box of tissues and the phone was right under there. I think everyone comes in their journey to these experiences every day, great and small. We need to read Beth's book. We need to acknowledge these in whatever way resonates with us individually. It's an individual journey. Can Beth and I help you? Absolutely. Should you take what we say here as 100%, you know, doctrine? Not at all. It's your journey. Mm-hmm. We just have a perspective that we're sharing. What do you think, Beth?
Yeah, I often say this, that you have to take the journey yourself. Absolutely no one could do that for you, but you don't have to do it alone.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's the beautiful part, that many people can gather in their intentions to journey. That's it was fun coming up with the title of the book. It started out like The Journey or the, you know, just nothing really landed, and I didn't want it to be too cliché. And then someone I was working with suggested Journey, and right away it just had all that right. Like it's the imperative, like Journey. It's and I think part of what we're forever dealing with in this world is that, and it's totally cliche, but because we believe it's about the destination, there are these, the unconscious attachment to the destination, then we're so easily manipulated into thinking, well, if it's about the destination, then everything along the way really doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how much harm comes to people. Doesn't matter how depressed they get when they're social isolated and locked down. It doesn't matter, you know, but as long as people survive on the other side, which actually is a lie anyway, because everybody's dying of something else rather than that virus that might not exist.
I say fear anyone who doesn't die of natural means at a time that is more or less natural. And again, that's a spectrum of its own, but I attribute it all to fear. So you've got, you know, distrust, ignorance, hate, anger, murder, dying under the surgeon's knife, or, you know, dying under the prescription bottle, dying under the chemotherapy lamp. Okay. It was just said the other day, Dr. Andrew Kaufman said, people, when diagnosed, by the way, diagnosed means to not know etymologically. Look it up, everybody.
I know. It means right? Two people don't know.
Yeah. There must be a witness because, of, you know, in legalese, yeah, there must be a witness there. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So when you're diagnosed with chemotherapy and not knowing actually what the cause of that mm-hmm. cancer is, people mm-hmm. are scared because they're mm-hmm. ignorant. They haven't done their own research, looked into it on the front end, mm-hmm. and then they give into that fear. And unfortunately, their container, their body has ended in mm-hmm. this physical realm.
Mm-hmm, yeah. mm-hmm. As you know, that's why I'm such a big proponent of people. You know, as soon as COVID hit, I had just published my book. And of course, I was planning to launch the heck out of it, really get out there. And then all of a sudden, it was just eclipsed. There was, you literally couldn't talk about anything other than that.
Yeah.
And it seemed like, well, I can't really promote my book because I'll look so shallow, or I'll look like I don't care about people. Yep. And I can't do any business because everybody's losing their money. They're losing their jobs. They're losing everything. Like there was just this 5 minutes where I was really the whole thing just contracted. And I thought, okay, well, I guess I'll just, live on savings, stick my head between my knees and, prep like crazy, get prepared for this apocalypse. And after all of this time, after everything that I've been through, it only took me about 5 minutes this time for that sine wave to come, you know, up and out of that dark unconscious and up. And it's like, no, this is absolutely not happening. No, I just heard this beautiful line. I'm sure you hear it all the time, but it's basically one man with God is a majority.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Amazing. Hey.
Right. Yeah. It's so it's this, you know, as the Tao says, one is everything and everything is one. Basically, mm-hmm. I think there are more articulate ways that we can describe that or try and gain a higher perspective with that. But yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think you refer to it as a paradox, I think. And the balance, I think, that you were feeling, or the imbalance when the COVID hit. During everything in this time, as you described it as a contraction, right? Mm-hmm. You had the fear, you had the contraction. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that the moon is bad, but if we were to look at the yin and the yang of the sun and the moon, well, the sun would be expansive and the moon would be contractive. That must be a balance. The Tao mm-hmm. says you must have one to define the other. That's mm-hmm. the only way. So in that contraction, you had to rebalance that, and you had to do the inverse of that to gain balance or a little bit more positivity in that spectrum. And you had to expand. You had mm-hmm. to talk. You had to share. Mm-hmm. You said, exactly, screw it. I'm going forward because now is the time to share this thing and talk with it. Right.
Yeah. And it was so two things. Like one was just to continue creating, because that's always the place that there's the greatest happiness. So no matter what's going on around me, I don't register that I'm a slave in a system if mm-hmm. I'm busy creating. I just, mm-hmm. I it doesn't compute at all. I have no feeling of being that. The other thing was that I realized that this work was more relevant than ever, not to congratulate myself, but because the only reason we're going through this, it's all consent based. And the only reason people are consenting is because they're unconsciously terrified.
Yeah.
So it all backs up to this exact same thing, just awakening to that place that we don't want to touch down with. Those feelings are so intense. You know, very special, dear client of mine yesterday, of course, I'm not going to say who this was, but like going through the depths of hell. Absolute hell. In fact, we were, I don't know, maybe we've evoked a few demons, but we were definitely attacked by demons. And it resulted in for a while, every time I said something, it would sound demonic, even to me.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Hey, incredible. Yeah. Like it was just, wow. But of course, you know, knowing the plot, I know how it looks on the other side. I've been through all of these attacks. I've faced the worst demon of all, death, but not forever. I mean, that's an ongoing a daily thing that I have to do. But, you know, in the meantime, I know the plot. I know the other side, and she got there, right? Like, yeah. Amazing.
That's great.
You know, complete turnaround to a point where not only did she not experience that demon anymore, she had no sense that she was going to have to deal with it ever again.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure that you didn't feel selfishly proud in that. You felt a higher calling. You felt a gratitude that from what you learned from her, and that your work has been verified in the way, perhaps, that, you know, God said it was good as he was creating our environment and us. Just look at it and say, that's good. So I don't see it. Pride in that. And it's awesome. I've done a little bit of healing myself, whether it's been, you know, physical or through the spoken word. And I can definitely resonate with what you're talking about. Yeah.
So yeah, it's I take no credit for it.
Going
it's
back to that, that case that you had, when you said that even when you were speaking, it felt as though the words coming out of your mouth were demonic. Can you go a little further on that, maybe?
I mean, some people would probably just chalk it up to a an audio glitch, right? That it was my mic or something like that. But it was fascinating because that hadn't happened before, and it was even you know, because you can recognize you learn at some point to recognize when you're dealing with a demon. And I'd just done the interview with Jerry, and we talked in a lot of detail about it, and I was aware of it. And then that's when things started happening with whether it's my mic or my audio or who knows what caused that. But it was an instant, affirmation or confirmation of what I had seen. Interesting. Nachiketa just said, death is not demonic. So yeah, we could go in and down this rabbit hole.
Well, yeah. So if death is the inverse of life, or of possibly the true birth, the fertilization, the divine spark, in that the spirit and the soul enter the container, and death is the spirit and the soul exiting the container, it would be as so, you know, there's nothing purely demonic in birth or death, right? Because if we are creations of the Most High, he encompasses all. And I think that's where a lot of people get hung up. You're saying, oh, okay, Almighty God is evil. Well, doesn't he kind of show his ways in scripture, right? It's just, it's not all hugs and gratitude and everything. Like, as the Big Lebowski says, there are rules, man. This is not Nam. There are rules. And so if he is all-knowing and all-seeing and all-powerful, he has to encompass the entire spectrum, right?
Fear
and love. And that was a big hang-up for me in my journey. And I'm there now saying, yeah, he's absolutely everything. Are there spirits under him which encompass more or less of both sides of that fear and love? Absolutely. And I think it's the subscription of the spirit which can completely overwhelm you if you allow it. And that's where we are overall in society, a realm generally of that of deception. God is calling you. That's a quote from your book, and he is. And most of us aren't listening at all. We're ignoring him.
And to me, the demon is deception. It's the illusion. Seeing, you know, because death is your enemy until you see through it, until you see that it's not what you think it is. Your fear of dying is the demon. And the mistake that we make is that the fear of dying is death itself. That's quoting from Lester Levinson's work.
Yeah.
So, you know, death, when I gave over to it, when I surrendered to it, when I let it have me, I just experienced the greatest joy of my entire life.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, well, that's not what I thought it would be. And it's the same when I've dealt with demons, and I just simply have no resistance. I let my fear actually go, instead of suppress it. and I become porous, and that demon is no, I can't even experience that demon anymore.
Right.
I have no sense of that it's there, or certainly that it has any power over me. So that's just a little clarification there.
Yeah. I mean, I almost draw a one-to-one in how we subscribe to YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. I think there are countless spirits that are a creation of the Most High, of God, that we can spiritually subscribe to at an instant. And not just singularly either. There are multiple ones. And I see in the chat, Miriam, hi. Hi, I love your input. And I think I can't speak on the father and the mother scripturally myself, but in episode 9 of Unintended Consequences with my new friend, the great Baldini, he touches on that pretty well. So in my view, if you'd like more clarification of the female and male aspect of the Most High, I think that's a good place to start. And then also in my view, there's a lot of things I just won't touch. I think that a lot of what's communicated scripturally is possible. That's just not for us. I think we're his creation. I'm humble to say that. And I think, hey, if I were the creator, I would have things kind of on a need to know basis, right? We are so below him. We cannot even comprehend his love or his fear, him being all knowing. But boy, we have had so much on God and scripture and everything. But I think that's a good place to start. And I have so many questions about that to ask Socratically. But again, I just love your book. And if people are just joining us, I gave a rave review for Beth's book, Journey. And I came to know Beth's work pretty recently, within the past 2 weeks. I've ordered the hard copy, but just to prepare for my speaking with her, I bought the PDF and read it in 2 hours. And you can all do that too. And you can do it of pretty high quality, take notes from it and draw from it. But as I said earlier, Beth, like I resonated with the Alchemist King and Hedonist Child. My question for you is, am I wrong to kind of accept multiple archetypes that I more or less subscribe to?
Not at all. No. And that's one of the premises there, is that you are all of the archetypes. So it's by the results that you get, if you guys do my quiz at the website, then it's not telling you who you are. My assumption is that if you had any interest in doing the assessment in the first place, you have all of those archetypes. In fact, we have all of the archetypes anyway, because it's collective consciousness. And then the quiz is reading where you are at on the hero's journey. And it's, I've said this many times, you've probably heard me say it already, but it is a gross oversimplification. Mm-hmm. The purpose of that very specifically is so that you have a point of entry into that work that is so incredibly, immensely complex. God spared no expense in making the world very intricate in its design, and especially the inner life. So it just gives you clues to where you know, the big thing is always to see, of course, your gifts. Like, that's a natural thing. You want to see your gifts, because many people are suppressing or in denial about those. But it's when you find shadows that I consider that to be gold on the path. When you see something that you did not see, it represents energy that's tied up, that isn't just working for you, because that's my, again, premise about the whole thing, that this was not always my perception by any means, that God is for you, wants you to have what you want, wants you to have that fulfillment, and to you know, birth out of you what's trying to bust out of you. That's all. Everything is actually in your favor. And so that's, you know, every time you stop suppressing and pushing against God's creation, which is your co-creation, then you get back the energy you were using to do that. And that energy naturally wants to do amazing things in your life, including, that's how I healed from a stage 4 lymphoma, right? So that was the big clue, that energy, when freed, it does the right thing. You can see it all over the place, the tiniest little provocation, and magic comes out of it. Just the, like, teeny tiny few minutes. At another client report on a massive gain in her world yesterday, we spent I don't know, about 45 minutes together, releasing on some of the things that are really eating at her. And over the next 2 days, those situations that seemed completely insurmountable totally resolved, and not just solved out, that like there's no problem, but the you know, it became new living situations, new income situations, new community connection and place to live, and like very hardcore measurable results for just the tiniest little bit of effort she made to face her difficult inner experience.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
I know. It's like, wow, right? So cool.
I've mentioned to people just in the past few days, I think, you know, summing up your story about the way that you overcame cancer, and that you were doing everything right on a material level. You were juicing, you know, you were doing all these things. You were, you know, taking the best physical care of your container, but there was one element that was missing that you suddenly discovered when you just let go of all that and say, hey, okay, if I don't have control, just screw it, right? And when you let go, and you let go of that stress, which is on that fear spectrum, you got cured. The cancer left.
Exactly.
I don't want to speak on your behalf, but that paragraph, I think that you described that in your book, is pretty cool. Mm. Yeah. And you use the word magic, and I'm not, and I don't interpret that you use the powers of the magi, right?
Truly. Yeah. It's an alchemist word. I can't stop myself from using it.
And Nachiketa says semantics are so important. Absolutely. Are we capable of knowing the perfect words to describe these miracles and our creator? Not at all. Not in this physical realm. The words that he uses are on a three-dimensional, universal, cosmic beauty that only he himself, the creator, or they, the one and the all, are capable of using. So semantics, I think, are important to gain a higher perspective. And that's my journey. I equate it a lot in my hike analogy, right? We're all just hiking on the trail together. And in my view, the majority of society is lost in the woods. And God is calling out to them. Again, I'll use that quote from your book. They're calling out, but they're completely ignorant to his voice.
So this is interesting. Hello to Rex George. He just said, nothing wrong with the spell here and there. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. And I was reading this book about an Aborigine experience with healing there. I'll share the link to that book. I can't right now, but perhaps in the comments section, if anyone's interested. Long story short, there was a man, I think he was in the 80s, and he was going on a walkabout, and he witnessed one of his guides fell down into a ditch and had a compound tibial fracture in his leg. So that's a pretty nasty break. Mm-hmm. And there was bone coming out of the skin there. And it's like in the battlefield medicine, mainstream medicine, you know, that we're in, it would take a long time to heal, right? I fortunately have never had a broken bone. But Beth, how long does it take for a bone to heal? Roughly 2-3 months, something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't broken one either. Amazing.
Yeah, you've been fortunate like me. So, well, yeah, long story short, there was a healer in the Aborigine culture, and she used practices of alchemy to heal this fracture. She recognized the break, and she immediately paid attention to the lack of love there in the body. And through that acknowledgement, the body was listening. And there's an episode that Dr. Kaufman did with biohealing recently, I think, that connects to this.
So fun.
So, yeah, the medicine woman was acknowledging this at first, and then she applied a physical compound to the break, and it was in the form of a paste. It was a thick, black, tar-like substance that she applied pretty sloppily, pretty haphazardly to the entire area, somewhat like a glue, and quickly and gently. And so that the bone and the tissue and the skin and the ligaments and the veins would all fuse together naturally with just the solution or this compound here. After that, she did a motion with her hands and she said some things that are completely a spell, absolutely a spell, with very positive intention, with all the love and the better end of the spectrum that she could possibly grab hold of. And she made a back and forth motion with her hands in a vertical up and down pattern to replicate the healing and the straightening out of the leg. And as she was doing this, she said, you know, things like heal, return to your natural form, you know, straighten out, be as you were, be as God intended, be straight, be not crooked, you know, like the deceiver, things of this nature. And again, I'll put the link up there in the comments, everybody. But what a beautiful story there, a firsthand account of this happening. And it's like these people, the Aborigines, the natives, these people who have these completely old, you know, ways and old values and beliefs, are they the antithesis of the realm of the deceiver? In my view, absolutely. It's nothing new age at all. It's very, very old. So yeah, nothing wrong with a spell here and there. that's been absolutely demonstrated, I think, and not to use the word demonstrated with the root of being a demo demon. Like it's intent, right? We have to use these words. It's intent.
It's all a spell. My book is a spell. I'm spelling you right now. Red is spelling you. Everybody in the chat, you made your comments that they're all spells. And then it's just like, what reason are you spelling? Are you doing it out of unconscious place from, you know, being afraid you're not going to survive or you're not going to be good enough or people won't love you or you're not going to be in control of your life? Or are you spelling out of some kind of love?
I love it. Kevlar, hey, so depression, if we're on a hike, I love the hike analogy. There's so many pitfalls and high points of the hike in the waveform that Beth mentioned earlier, the oscillation, right? The frequency. So if you're hiking, and this is for depression, right? If you're hiking and you fall down in the hole, the only perspective you have is of the lowest point, and that's what you see. Those hiking around you can see down the hole. They have a higher perspective than you. Mm-hmm. And they can see, hey, you're only 10 feet down. You can get out of this. We can lend you a branch. You can climb out of this. Just start, digging little steps in the wall, right?
Yeah.
But if you're depressed and you don't have anyone there and you're calling out, right, then it's much, much, much more difficult to get out of that, hint, hint, low perspective, right?
Oh, I see this all the time in myself and clients that, you really feel like you're in a place of hopelessness or a place of, there's no moving forward from there. There's no options. You literally either don't know what to do with you. You think there's nothing to do. You get to the other side of that illusion of fear and boom, you're in a completely new vantage point. And the action that you need to take is natural, easy to take, effortless. In fact, it probably gives you energy to take it. It's exactly what you're saying. It's just a different vantage. And it's almost always one release away. You know, if you talk about it in terms of unsuppressing the energy that's just locked in there innocently, it's not even demonic. You know, like even that level of demon isn't what we think it is.
Absolutely, Beth. Yeah, beautiful. Mm-hmm. And as we discussed earlier, if the majority of our society is completely, you know, operating in a basis of ignorance, and if they're turning away from their childlike, hint, hint, instinct to question things, and they're ignoring the truth, and there's disgust for actual knowledge, they're basically stuck in the beginning of their journey. So these people that are murdering, right, others, that are carelessly discriminating, anything that you see in the NEWS news, okay, any of that is on the fear side of the spectrum, and they're just they're little children. I don't want to say kids because that's baby goat, but they're little children and they're lost and they're just ignoring. Mm-hmm. It's sad. It's powerful and it's subtle. It's subtle. Yeah.
I know. It's all child abuse, like to the children and to all of the adults that are in that child place, just going like, you know, I just want to not look at things. I don't want to feel anything. I don't, you know, and the system completely supports the pain-free life. There's a painkiller for every little discomfort that you could experience. But it is it is that feeling of being lost, which is home for the child. And it's a marker, and I'm still very much getting used to this. It really took me 20 years plus writing the book to train myself that every time I feel lost, I am in the child archetype. And it is always a breakthrough, because then I know what kind of energy I'm dealing with. Then I know it's probably something about denial. It's probably a betrayal that I don't want to face, or it's likely already happened and I just don't want to feel it. And then I'm right away, I've created some momentum just in identifying if there's, you know, one thing that anybody or everyone could take from me is that, when you feel lost, it's, you're just there in the child, and it's, you know, there are the gifts of the child, the curiosity, the playfulness, the true innocence that can't be killed with knowledge, no matter how dark or creepy it is.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I was going to ask you, and you kind of went into it naturally, but the sublevels of the archetypes, you said that the archetypes are just a starting point, and by no means that, you know, in the kingdom of heaven or under God. There's only eight, right? No, not at all, right?
No.
How many would you estimate that there are?
I don't know. I'm not particularly, I don't know. It could be hundreds. I don't know. And they seem to be, you know, you can create them, you can recreate them. I've had a go with the mermaid archetype. I don't talk about it very much anymore, but
the merpreneur,
right? The merpreneur. Yeah. It's just, it's very underwritten. It's still there. I still attract people because of it. And the energy of it is really a cluster. You know, that's how I actually found the eight archetypes to begin with. It was out of this mer energy. And I could say that I've realized that this was shown to me. I could be really mystical about it, but I think I would go back a little bit to the child in that I was playing with it.
Yeah, that's good.
And I just, you know, because it's not so serious. In fact, it came from a very serious place after my dad died, and I was in a grief place. But it was like something was playing with me there. Something was trying to capture my attention every level. And this really was a product of healing, of letting go of the grief, of letting go of the war that I had with the masculine archetype. It came with the gifts. It came with this playfulness, the energy that was coming to me. And then when I figured out a name to give it, when I saw it was this mer thing, then I actively started studying it. Well, what is the energy of it? What is it calling me to?
That's awesome.
And then it filtered out these eight archetypes, which were soup for a couple of years until my mom died. They were just archetype soup. And yet with the soup, I still had a lot of success in working with that material. So, but the next level, the next layer came from, again, all of the grief, all of the hardship, the darkness, the facing of being an orphan, right? Talk about a child experience.
It's terrible.
It's terrible and it's beautiful at the same time, right? It's why practically every human on earth is going to experience that, and why it's the biggest loss. Even they say, I don't know, I haven't lost a child, but they say it's bigger than losing your own child is being orphaned. And then that's how it was revealed to me that the hero's journey that I had only looked at intellectually, I'd only wrapped my head around it, but never felt it in my bones. And that's when all of a sudden the journey was just, it was mine. I had owned it. I was fully aware of the cycles of it. And, you know, I point to it as one circle, really it's a spiral. So that was the breakthrough too, that otherwise you feel like, oh my God, how could I be lost again? I did all this work on myself. I healed. I had massive breakthroughs. I had big accomplishments to prove it. And then here I am wanting to suck my thumb in the corner. Like, what's, you know, and then you're like, oh, I must not have healed. Maybe I didn't get it.
You were self-nurturing. Yeah. Sucking your thumb. Yeah.
Exactly. That's it. But it's just, I think that's how God keeps us all humble and on the same field. It doesn't matter how much you've been through. It doesn't matter how much work you've done. It doesn't matter how much you've healed. You're all facing, you and that baby are in the same boat.
Yeah. We're going through this journey, and there's no end in this physical journey. Could there be something else after that? Yeah, it's been touched on in scripture. I won't go into it now, but yeah, it's, you're going to have hurdle after hurdle after hurdle, and they might be tougher and tougher, but then you'll also have the tools, you know, to deal with the smaller ones too. Megzy, by the way, yeah, I'm going back and forth with the chat, as not to be distracted. I'd like to apply the most focus I can. Usually after I speak, I have to take a nap just because I'm so focused. But so Beth, back to this Myrrh energy, that kind of you acknowledged and that you were in communication with after your trauma, right, of being orphaned. Did it come in an innocence of a childlike form, as if, you know, if children are playing, they're like, hey, look over here, right? And there's the innocence and the curiosity there. Was it kind of like that?
For me, actually, it was being terrified that I had been betrayed by my mother.
Oh.
Yeah, that was the big, massive breakthrough. I was all of a sudden, I knew already, because as my mom went down, forgive me if I'm sharing this story a second time. I think I've said it on a stream before, but I knew that, you know, my sisters and I had lots of issues on my mom's deathbed, that we tried to manage them, and everyone actually gave us kudos how great we were pulling together. But really it was, we wanted to kill each other so big.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's just, I'm aware that it's a door for me, because it's not the first time I've been through that kind of, all those feelings. They were all the same damn feelings, similar, everything. But after my mom passed, I think it was the night after, and I was sitting and I was journaling. I had gifted my mom a journal, and she had only written a few scribbles in it. She ended up taking it to the hospital, and she was trying to write when she couldn't speak, and that's all. So I ended up taking that journal back, and I was writing a letter to my mom, and I realized, oh my God, the worst thing in my imagination isn't that my sisters have betrayed me my whole life. It's that my mom was in on it. That it was a collusion.
Oh yeah.
That, so I felt the terror of that. And then I went through it, because that's my way. I've been doing this for 20 years. And I got to the other side and I realized, like, yep, it's true. It's all true. They were all in on it. And I could see the evidence. I could, you know, there was this little filing system of all those little moments when they thought I couldn't hear them, or they talked to me like they talked to each other by accident. Or there would be, you know, just all of these little clues. And it's like, yeah, it was totally true. And so I lived through my all-time worst fear. And that is the child archetype, that they are trying to prevent at all cost the betrayal and the abandonment, which is a betrayal. And so I lived through it. I came out the other side, all of a sudden, whoosh, like this whole energy just came into my system, and I felt like $1 million, and I started jumping up and down. How much energy came into my system around that? And I know it was a miracle. And then I got on the phone with a girlfriend, and I got brave about asking her, like, listen, is there some kind of collusion going on? Because of course you want to project it out. I didn't want to think about my mom. That's too dangerous to think my mom was colluding against me. So, you know, I was projecting it onto this girlfriend. I got on the phone with her and talked through all of my fears, and had this like incredibly deep connection with this woman as a result of it, of that kind of transparency, getting to the other side. And, you know, it was absolute magic from the darkest place through that child. That's what, did I answer that question?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's beautiful. And I love you sharing. And I think it's really important when we come across guides on our journey like this. I think so many are maybe selfish and egotistical in the way that they don't share their own path, right? They'll write a book and it's all based on theory, and they take from this and they take from that, but they don't directly apply it to their own experience. And you absolutely have no shame in doing that. And it's so important to weave into your book and into your teachings as a life coach. And you know what? It makes it all the more genuine. You know, it's like, hey, I've already eaten this and drank that, and I wouldn't, you know, give it to you unless I tested it for myself.
Yeah, that's a true mentor. We were talking about that yesterday in a class, that it's the mentors do show up on the path.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're, what makes them a mentor to you is not that they did the coaching certification program, although I highly recommend mine. You know, it's that they have gone through the thing. They went through, the alcoholic got to the recovery, and now they can walk with you. You feel blind. You feel like you are, you don't, you know, you've no idea whether you're going to even live or die through your experience, but they said, I lived through it.
Yeah.
And you can just keep your eye on them and know that you're likely to be able to get to the other side as well. Just the, even the energetic transmission is almost enough, even if they don't give you the right advice. And really, mentors shouldn't give you a bunch of advice anyway. That's not hugely helpful. Sometimes it can be totally harmful, actually, to give advice.
Yeah, totally. How many examples do you have of marriage counselors, for instance, and be like, okay, well, to fix this, you need to make him jealous. So, you know, you need to do this or that. And then what does it do? It totally backfires. It causes a whole new set of problems. And you're better off just communicating with the other person in general and getting a non-biased third-party perspective that, you know, and that asks you questions.
Yeah. And that's totally, the child is going like, just tell me what to do. Just give me advice. Just, you know, and I'm actually pretty good at that. I've made a lot of progress in my life that way. Being in a child place, my very first business coach, I had no idea what she was talking about, not a clue, but she would say, go do this. And I would go do it. And then I'd get all these great results and I'd go, wow, I don't even know why that worked. So I just go back to her. Okay, tell me what to do now. And she'd tell me, and I'd go out and again, it would just, this is serial. And finally it was months, but I finally tuned into why what I was doing was working. And, but in the meantime, you know, it was, that actually was very positive in terms of advice.
She was like a Mrs. Miyagi of sorts, right?
You know. Oh, I'm not familiar.
Oh, you know, Karate Kid, go wax the car, right? He gives the main character, the young student, the boy, many tasks that he can't understand. You know, wax the car, paint the fence, right? But what he was doing is teaching fundamentals of karate, you know, through these means that this the student could understand, that he could grasp. And there was so much frustration and so many questions in that. I think I've seen the movie once, but I got the gist of it. You know, he's teaching through example, mysteriously, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's what we really learn from. That's what I'm banking on with my kid too. I'll just keep doing this. And that's cool. That's so the awesome. Most guidance.
That's a whole nother journey is having children. Yeah,
For sure. Do you already have children?
Yeah, I do have one child, and that's a major source of both sides of the spectrum for me. I mean, like I just said, it's a journey all in itself, and it's a beautiful one. It's such a great experience.
Yeah, those binding contracts, such as having a child or getting married, which is even less so because, as you know, many people can break it off. But the truly binding contracts are the big teachers in life. Yeah. The ones that you could get out of it, but it would be so much damage to a lot of souls to do it, that you have everything invested. It's your own genetics that there's no mistake that you have that incredible sense of obligation to that life and to, you know, to be the best to that life. You've got to be the best to your life. That's the only way to do it.
Exactly. And you mentioned contract, and to kind of just zoom in a little bit, you know, on the physical nature of that, you know, the details of that contract, you know, like binding contracts, like a birth certificate, right, or a marriage certificate, or a job, you know, or an occupation where you are under contract. You know, these are man-made physical means, not, you know, of the creation of the Most High. That have deceived us and have bound us, as you say, and have chained us, you know, into these things that are unnatural, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the way to go, but it's not like I can just tear up my birth certificate, right, and just go completely off the grid and just, you know, not having the experience and the know-how and go and live in the woods. Now, Nachiketa is here, and I honestly love this guy, and we've talked for only an hour in private, and we need to talk publicly because I think we resonate pretty well.
Nice.
And I told him in the conversation, man, I am so inspired by you. You're doing it. He lives in India. He lives on the side of a mountain. His perspective literally is very, very high. And he's still on a journey, right? He's humble in that. He asks questions too, and he participates, and he's hungry. He's curious. Mm-hmm. I think there comes a time. I think there was a right time for him when he could do that. Mm-hmm. And it's going to, there might be a time for me. I mean, that's part of the reason that I wish to stay anonymous. I have obligations and responsibilities that are just too delicate, too subtle, you know, to explain and to release my anonymity, to reveal my identity, right? I just can't do that right now.
Sure. Yeah, everybody's at a different place. I try to be very, and I'll go through waves too, and I'll admit it, that there's a little sense of that I've got a colleague who's behind the scenes, very much in the know about the corruption in the world and all the lies being told and all of that kind of thing, but he won't go public with it. And he's got a sizable audience, and he's, you know, watching me go public, and he's watching some of his peers go public, but you can see he's just in that place where he's living a double life, and that's how it needs to go. And he's supporting people at the level that he can.
Absolutely.
And, you know, for those, I don't know, am I going to look back and see that this is such a big mistake that I put my name and my face to the truth? All I can say is that I feel like this is what I have to do.
Yeah.
And that's kind of all I know. There still is just because we're in a state of, you know, I've felt this urgency my whole life, really. And of course it does nothing but escalate. The curve is definitely doing this right now. And
it's speeding up. It's
speeding up. Yeah, exactly. There's more, and you know, so I'm more apt to create some kind of conflict almost everywhere I go, just because I'm willing to have a difficult discussion with people. One example I wanted to share with my audience is that every night we have helicopters going over. Every day, actually. It's interesting, since I called, I have not heard them, but I finally got mad enough. I'm laying on my back listening to a podcast. And I turn, and it's in the middle of the night, and I'm hearing the fucking helicopter go. And so I phone our local 311, and I'm going like, what's up with the helicopter? First off, he like, I can't understand him. He's obviously, you know, I can't understand his accent. He's so thick. It's like, I'm sorry, I can't understand you. He was obviously irritated at me for that. And I'm a little bit making trouble already, because I don't know. I can feel myself making trouble. I just said about the helicopters. He said, you know, Madame, I can't speak to you about this. You must call the non-emergency police line. And I said, okay. Mm. So I realized I hit a dead end with him. And I said, well, do you live in the city? I took all my guard down. I let all of that, you know, kind of anger, edginess thing go. I just said, do you live in the city? And he goes, I don't have to tell you anything. And I just went, actually you do. Actually you do. You know what? Our taxes pay your bills. You are employed because of the money that I give, and I could find out who you are and where you live, because, you know, I was just starting to turn the tables there.
Yeah.
And you got super defensive, and, you know, we were a little combative, and then I went on a tirade. I rant and started saying about, like, I don't know if you have a family or you have a children or where you live, if you're here in the city, but this really matters. We are under attack. Are you a person? We need to speak person to person. We need to connect and see that we all want the same thing, safety for our children. And they're trying to keep us separate from talking to each other. That's why I'm talking to you. And I said, I love you and I love your family. Oh, and wow. I love this earth. And I was bombing him. Yeah. And then I was quiet. Ooh, and he goes, yeah. And he's like, you could hear the melt on the yeah. other. He's like, yeah. Oh, he said, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, thank you. And it was just this like incredible breakthrough moment. And I'm like, okay, have a nice night.
You bombed him. You love
bombed him. I completely bombed him. He did not know that was coming at all, but you could, you know, I felt like it was a total success, even though I had no breakthrough about the helicopters, which I haven't been hearing. I don't know. Did they finally say, don't go over Bass House or something? I don't know. But it felt like a victory, just that he got the love, and that was, that's all it is. And that's all we need to know.
Did you think of this? When you felt the struggle, right? When you felt your way going, you know, you were on the wrong path when you were talking to him and you were arguing with him, you were using his language, right?
Right. It was coming up against. So it was, right. he was in resistance. I was in resistance. And then all we do is, you know.
Yeah. And you were swimming upstream and there was no solution. But then when you went 180 degrees in the opposite side of the spectrum and you completely love bombed him like you did, he melted. And this happens when people are, you know, oppressed in society and you have such outward love. I think there's some YouTube videos of Nachiketa, help me out. There is a there's some sort of martial arts master that he doesn't take any punches because he exudes this frequency of love, and his attacker simply cannot hit him. Cannot hit him because his frequency is so high, right? And it's just like in the Matrix. Neo doesn't even have to dodge bullets anymore, right?
Wow. The lion lays down at the feet of that. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
I am looking at the chat. I don't know if my text can go in there through StreamYard, but I will give out my email address if that's okay with you, Beth. It is roodvox at gmail.com. Sure. I'm not incredibly busy. I have gotten quite a bit of emails, but I haven't reached a threshold where I need to kind of take a step back. And so I waited for 11 years to speak publicly on this. And I finally, you know, discovered through my journey that it was my time to contribute, because, I'll stop the world and melt with you. Yeah.
Hey, Steve. I love that. Yeah. So roodvox at gmail.com. If you would like to contact Red and have a conversation with him. And I love that. Love this.
It's been good. Any questions in the chat? Really good stuff. It's a tight community. I love the gratitude that I've been given and such a warm welcome. But it's, if you can get over the creep factor of it, I've been right along with you the entire time, in the most positive way. I think there's going to be a collection of sorts that, you know, that all of us together might see each other in a higher level. That's my view. Maybe Baldini can get into that a little bit more with me.
But one thing I'd love to talk about is just the day that we're in here, the time, the season, that it is significant. And I'll just admit that I could look up the summer solstice 100 times, and there's still a part of me that goes like, huh?
Yeah.
you know, so what significance do you give it? And I'd love to hear from the chat also, like everything that you know about this day and what it means and, you know, what's happening in the satanic world around it, right? This is high ritual time. Yeah.
Yes. So very powerful time. But I would also say paradoxically that every day is a very powerful time also, regardless of the signs that we see in the firmament. So Baldini and I arrived together at the conclusion, you know, that the luminaries and the stars and the moon are for signs and for seasons. And we should keep track of these signs. Right. Crow especially is very, very big on the sky clock. Okay. Please pay attention to what is going on with the sun, the moon, the luminaries. I think if we're in this group here together, let's go ahead and agree that we don't live on a ball and that we're not spinning around and that these things aren't spinning miraculously around with us at the over bullet speed. Okay. We're special. We're here. We are of a higher creation. And these things are rotating around us in a very, very special configuration that we cannot physically comprehend, but we can pay attention to. Let's pay attention to these things and take notes. What's going to happen in the very, very near future? Yes, it is a sign. I think I can leave. I'll leave it there. I think I might have some more to speak on later. I wanted to save some stuff for Baldini about when the day actually begun in creation. I think we touched on that, and I think I got his gears spinning there, and I want to come back to that. Yeah.
Yep. Pay attention to the sky clock, Sue says. Exactly. And so, but what is the meaning of this solstice? Tomorrow's a solar eclipse as well. Wow, in India.
Yeah, so if life has meaning and the meaning of life is that life has meaning, it's all the same. We should live in the moment. We should recognize that we are of a higher creation, right? The sun's energy is completely complementary to the moon's energy, right? It's the yin and the yang. They complement each other. One is not any more powerful in my view than the other. It is a perfect complement. I think that the weight of the importance of what's going on with the sun is directly proportional to the weight of the importance of what's going on with the moon. I'd like to touch on lawful timekeeping. I'd like to throw that term out here for a few more chats, if anyone's willing to have me, and see if anybody can kind of identify with that term. We need to know what time it is. And to give you a hint, we did not start this stream at 12:30 Central. Right, people?
Right, I've heard Croat say that. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, and so what happened there?
Yeah, well, we have a division of time that is of the creation of man.
So they screwed with us, right?
Yes, exactly. In time in itself is a deception as we know it. We subscribe to this calendar that's from Pope Gregory. It's been established, and I say this with Baldini, not that we need to abandon the details here, but let's remember them. Let's take notes and remember them. We don't live in a natural version of time right now that we subscribe to in general. Yeah,
totally true. I just saw Sue's comment about how the eclipse works. Tune into Cami Nodal's work. She has a beautiful demonstration, actually, of exactly how the eclipse might work.
Agreed. Everybody heard last post. I think it went live yesterday. It premiered. Outstanding work, and that's why I don't pretend to know. I refer, as we all should, to those who have those special gifts that you mentioned, Beth. You know, I want to pay attention. I want to know what time it is. I want to look up in the sky clock and notice these things and say, hey, this is the time we should do this. I mean, I believe man and woman are a species of an agricultural nature, right? I think there's a lot of hints sprinkled in there. So how do we grow things, right? What does the sun and the moon do? How does soil actually work? What are weeds' purpose, right? I have a higher perspective on these things, but go to Cami. She's doing the experimentation. She has hypotheses that she's verifying. She's asking questions and she doesn't pretend to know. She's buzzing with me. I'd love to pick her brain too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I could talk to her for a really long time. She's putting the time and the energy in on, I feel like on all of our behalf, you know, living, breathing and sleeping it. And then all we, you know, we just get to talk to her and luxuriously get the transmission. It's so beautiful how we do that for each other.
We need that in the community, right? We all have our little skills that we that are naturally in us. Okay.
I know. This is a good point. This is a good point because I sometimes catch myself in this place of like, oh man, I need to look into this subject and I need to look at that subject. And why is it that every time I hear that thing, I come away with the same, like, yeah, I know that's true, but I couldn't explain it to other people. And then I'm, you know, kind of hard on myself. Well, I need to study and something. And it's like, well, actually, this is my subject. This is what I study 24/7 when I live and breathe and sleep and work. And this is my subject. This is what I've got going on. And then when we're all together, when I let myself, I see Cami is the same God spark as I am. I can live through her. I can get her transmission. I can get your transmission. I can get Israel Adams and Kevlar and Need to Connect and Flat Accord Music and Nachiketa and Kelly FE, right? Like that's...
I'm just laughing because of pure joy, and I have to outwardly express it. I don't want to suppress my joy, everybody, so I'm not laughing.
Oh, no, I'm good with it.
It's just happiness. So Kevlar, not yet. It'll take time. Yeah, it's a journey. Nachiketa, I defer to everyone else. So if we're all collectively mapping out this journey, right, and bouncing it back in triangulation, right, with everybody else, we can reach a higher perspective together. Yeah.
I like this comment. Flat Accord Music said, if you kill time, it will always end up getting the last laugh. Yes. I feel that so much.
You talk about that through idleness in your book, right?
Yeah. That's the greatest pain. There's still a battle against that. People see me as so, you know, ambitious or productive, and there is that side to it, but it just seems like, well, what else is there to do? The idleness is a certain demon of its own.
Yeah, waiting gives the devil time, and then it gets obfuscated and completely twisted in the secret societies like Freemasonry, for example. You know, through my research, the first few degrees are just be that of a bee, right? Busy. And I just think that's like the inverse of the whole idea, you know,
of using
your time in a qualitative nature. I'm very, very big on quality. So people, you know, they've asked me before, so are you a vegetarian, or, you know, what's going on with you? Are you vegan? You know, it's like, what do you not buy, you know, leather? Like, why do you buy like only like the nicest cars, stuff like that? Well, there's a quality aspect. And if we're operating generally in society in a program of deception and subscribing to ignorance at large, quality, I think, is not to be dismissed.
Yeah.
The stream that we're having here is one of quality. You have quality flowers sitting right next to you. You drink quality juices that you've mentioned, right?
Totally.
So it's like, is quality the same as luxury? No. And that's defined for me pretty clearly in your book. But yeah, let's be more qualitative instead of so quantitative. I mean, look at Costco, right? Come on. Costco gives me this, like, ever since I started submitting myself to that prison, and I've only been there a couple of times, I would have this like panic attack. It's so big. It's all squares. It's all the angles of sorrow. It's like a big warehouse prison that's all flat surfaces. There's no warmth. There's no absorption. Now you go there and you've got to wear a muzzle and keep 6 feet away from people. You know, like, where's the quality in all this?
It's, I know,
fake.
I have to tell this story that I can actually measure my, you know, awakening or whatever it is by how I feel in a store.
Yeah.
And my poor son, right? So he loved to go shopping. He's just got that little romantic personality, and it was always so fun to be in the stores. Mm-hmm. And I would get nothing but anxiety in those stores because I could feel how manipulated and, you know, all of the vibes coming down right from the elevator music coming through the walls, and just like everything. It just got my whole, I was doing this the whole time, and I was like, okay, get in and do it fast. And we'd always inevitably get something that, that really wasn't what we needed because we were trying to do it fast. And, you know, so it took me his whole lifetime, took me 13 years to get to a place where now I can walk in stores and I feel fine. But of course, then they bomb us with the COVID thing. And it's this, so Costco actually used to be one of our favorite little field trips because it's just got, you know, lots of little good things going on. They were just genuinely good, lucid people who worked there. They'd meet you in the eye. I would always compliment them on the way out. This is not even, you know, I just don't do that to anybody without good cause. And then this thing hit and they just inverted. They went from being people who really served to people who were really scared and extremely authoritative and telling you what to do. And I would have yelling fights in the lineup at Costco. I would yell because they were not going to come near you. So you have to yell across the street and they're acting like the crossing guard. It's like, no, I've been crossing the street for a long time by myself. I'm not going to listen to you. Everybody come with me. I would say like everybody, you know, and it was just this. And then, you know, I tell everybody, we go to the mall the other day and we walk in the wrong way because they've got an in and an out now. We walk in the wrong way and she's like, you went the wrong way. And I went like, we're already in. I said, we're already in. And she's like, okay. She goes, oh, well, just use the hand sanitizer. I said, no, I'm allergic to it. And she goes, oh, well, use your own hand sanitizer. I said, no, I'm allergic to it. Like this. And she's like, okay, I got nothing. Like, okay, right. Like it's so, I love seeing that. And I love other people seeing it too, because she otherwise is coming across like the security guard and she says the rules. And if you don't follow her, you can't buy her shit. And, you know, it was, I just broke all the rules and we had a perfectly fine experience and got our things.
She totally had, remember the old printers? They were like the tractor feed printers, or it's even in the movie Office Space, totally. I think.
Actually,
PC load letter. What is that? PC load letter.
Yeah.
It's like it's an error message that she could not compute. No, sanitizer, ethyl alcohol, lady.
Yep.
So, yeah. And, you know, they're operating out of the premise of tradition, right? Mm-hmm. I've been crossing this for years. Mm-hmm. Well, you haven't been doing it of a high quality or even lawfully at all. You know, with the correct intention. So
exactly. Yep. That's man, we got our work. Yeah, we got our work cut out for us. So great. But this has been a really beautiful conversation. I had a feeling it would be, and my feelings have been wrong. But I also know that honestly, when I go wrong, I just go right. As soon as I realize I'm going wrong, I go right. So it just seemed like, what do we have to lose here? Hey, I just wanted to, before I forget, I seen Vonich. I don't know if you're still here on the live, but I listened to your interview with Brian Stevie. Am I saying it right?
Stavely, I think.
Stavely? Right? Okay, thank you. Thank you. Excellent. And that was just so powerful. Vonich, you're still here. Excellent. That was so powerful. I'm very touched by your story and how you're telling it. With that kind of authenticity, that fearlessness.
Yeah, I saw you too, Voynich. Awesome talk. Mm-hmm. I have questions for everybody, literally everybody. I think it'll come to the point where everyone is doing live streams on their own stuff, and it's just going to be the synchronicity in the best way possible. So not the transhumanist synchronicity, as Ray Kurzweil describes it, but in completely the inverse of that. And you can see it speeding up. I mean, I I waited for 11 years to go public about this, and I have value to contribute to everyone. I mean, for example, last night, Ceiling Fan Man asked the question Socratically. He said, when's the best time, do you think, to kind of awaken to all this? And there were some various responses in the chat. Mm-hmm. And I myself, coming from a qualitative view, would start at the age of a child, when they can, you know, start to kind of absorb things and have their own views around mm-hmm. age three, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Well, there's no wrong time, and you're proof of that, Beth. I'm proof of that. Mm-hmm. There is no wrong time. Right. If God is calling out to you on your path, and you're ignoring Him, and you choose to make that choice and ignore the Creator, yeah, you are wasting time."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And even that's kind of pre-writ, because that's part of the hero's journey, and part of that child archetype is to refuse, you know. So I would say like half my clients that come through my door saying, okay, I'm going to build a business based on my purpose. And I'm like, okay, we're, you know, you're all in, I'm all in, let's do this. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. then halfway through, they're like, oh, that wasn't my sacred purpose. That, you know, I didn't, no, it's this other thing. Now I need a new degree and a certificate. I'm going to have to put a pause on all this. And, you know, so it's, and it's easy to be irritated at them, but at the same time, I know that it's just part of it, that you have that you have the strong attachment, attraction, and then you're going to have that strong aversion. And once both of those forces reconcile them, you realize that they're just two actual illusions operating over you. And then it's like God takes you by the feet, and the rug is coming out from underneath you, and you're already going. There, some decision got made that you want your freedom more than you are afraid of your calling.
And Lindsay last night on her channel, Rogue Ways, described that as a snapback. I think she was alluding to more or less of what I refer to as the spectrum, you know, the love fear spectrum. And once you get to the extreme end of that, there's a snapback. And in my view, there's only one person who can conceive of the extreme of each of those, and that is the Creator. But yeah, I think everyone has their, I've heard it called a shelf before, right? Mm-hmm. Their own personal weight that they can bear, their own personal limits. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a great chat. And I knew it would be great too, Beth. Mm-hmm. And I like to do it this way, because mm-hmm. I like for people to be able to hear us meet each other publicly. Yeah. I don't have any fear in that at all. Mm-hmm. Voynich just said, we want to know each other. Yeah, yeah. I want to know everybody.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We want to know ourselves, and we want to know each other. That's just such beautiful, because that is the connection. That's when you realize that you're connected. That's why these chats are so popular. It's why every night I'm on somebody's chat.
It's getting making faster.
These connections. Yeah, yeah, it really is. It really is. And then I'm going to drive 2,500 kilometers pretty soon for those same connections. And I'm not sure how much to say about it, but it's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy.
I remember mm-hmm. it's been a while since I've done the whole kilometer conversion. I did live in Japan for 3 years. It was quite an experience, mm-hmm. a great experience. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's part of the journey. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm cool to wrap up, kind of, if you want. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yep. We're getting lots of thanks and love in here.
Gratitude to you all. So much.
Yeah.
Gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I'm infinitely grateful for this beautiful community at every level. And there's room for everyone. If you got truth to speak, then find an avenue, just as Red Fox has done. And if you can't find an avenue, like I couldn't, I was rejected by everybody. And that's what made me constantly just create my own thing. Okay, well, if I can't get into anybody else's party, I'll have my own party.
Exactly.
Still doing that.
And on a surface level, we're going through a journey with StreamYard. You've never had a technical difficulty. And
until this morning.
Until me. And I assure you, everybody, I'm not technically deficient. My system is tuned up. It's relatively new. it's just buggy. I don't get it, but we made it. We got it to work. It had something to do with the headset that you were using and maybe the way that my system here, I'm set up with broadcast stuff. So I'll probably just try and start at a more basic level and go back to a USB mic and plug in a headset. I'll start there. Maybe I've got too much going on my end, but I don't know. It's a journey. So
It is actually... It can be painfully simple. I often give this kind of advice that if I had waited till I had a decent setup, I wouldn't be doing this until now. But I have the benefit of having done it the whole time along. And now that I have a decent setup, then it's all good. Letting it be not good along the way is a gift.
Yeah. You gotta learn. So awesome. Let's continue, everybody.
Please. Yeah. So reach out if you'd like to redfox@roodvox@gmail.com. And if you would like to connect with me, I'm always into that. You can visit my website, bethmartins.com. There are the two archetype quizzes there, one for the mermaids and one for the king heroes. Sometimes they're interchangeable. Mostly the mermaids end up being king heroes rather than the other way around. You can learn where you are on the path of purpose and see what might be sucking the life out of you at this time that you can, just for the seeing, make some kind of leap in your energy and have that energy work for you in a magical way. I am available for one-on-one coaching. If anyone wants to apply to work with me, there's a tab at my website to apply to work. And I'm going to be running my second version of the Journey Code Coaching Certification Program coming up in September. We are now, I guess, a third of the way through the first one. It's been going amazing, like so amazing, way, way more than I could have imagined. Super excited about this material and the speed at which people are leaping and becoming themselves really beautiful mentors and coaches. So that's opening up soon. And tomorrow night, you can catch us here on my channel with the Bitches Brew third episode. So it's going to be another solstice event, and I'm going to find some juicy questions for those beautiful five other women that are joining us. Rose 777, Kelly BFE, Patricia Steer, Jennifer, darn it, I don't remember her last name. Bitches Brewskis. Yeah, you got it. It's so a fun.
Crazy awesome show. I mean, it's like,
oh, thank you.
I don't dare compare it to Golden Girls because y'all ladies are much younger than that bunch. But I mean, there's you have to keep some humor in this, you know. It'll just get a headache way too quick. I love it.
Yeah, it's super fun. We actually had a really good talk about menopause last time and all the hot flashes and everything. So that's a good one to go back to on that was on Karen's channel. So,
I don't mean to mansplain or anything, but with the menopause, in my view, is the release of too much yang energy in the container, the heat, the expansion. And I touched on that a little bit with Rose. I think there's a there. That's all I have to say for now.
There's a there. Nice. Yeah. I love it. All right. So we'll see you guys here tomorrow I'm setting it for 7:15. It's kind of an odd time central. But I think that worked out with the Secrets of Saturn somehow ending at a certain time. And that's just what we'll do. All right. I love you guys a lot. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your solstice. Go and enjoy God's earth and put your joy in the world. Put your truth in the world. Nothing wrong can happen, even though it might be dicey feeling.
Later, everybody.
All right. Take care. Bye.